Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This is episode 299, and we have spoiler-free reviews of Hostels and Open House. We're going to celebrate Breaking Bad turning 10, a report from Sundance, and our From the Outside In topic this week, how to defeat an iconic movie hero. All of that, plus a whole lot more, so let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow host, Scotty Clark.
Hey, Aaron, how's it going?
Such a dork. John Davenport.
Hi-ho!
Well, this is the first episode we've recorded since, I think, all together since probably December, right?
Yeah, the band's back together again, because last time it was you, me, and Shawnee.
Yeah. So I do want to say, before we really kick things off here, you will notice that, A, both these dim bulbs sounded like puppets there, and you'll never know why. It's just it's a mystery behind the curtain that you just don't get to know. But those are in jokes that people hate in podcasts, but we just did it anyway. I don't know what
hashtag outtakes.
There you go. But you will notice that as you go that we tweaked our format a little bit. We're going to do reviews different going forward as well, so be sure to check timestamps in the show notes if you're somebody that worries about that kind of stuff, so you know where everything is. We kind of move stuff around. We're just going to shake it up.
Tidying things up a bit, right?
Exactly. And next week is our episode 300.
Oh, it's a doozy. It's going to be a doozy.
I was like, you just said it's a doozy. I'm like, we haven't done it yet. How do you know? You just know?
You gave us the format.
Well, we could all just be boring.
Yeah. I'm going to be fantastic.
Here's one thing. We didn't get a chance to talk about Oscar nominations, which, I mean, it's a week and a half. People are sick of talking about Oscar nominations at this point because the awards are a month away. But the one thing that I don't see any article or website ceasing to talk about are the quote-unquote snubs. Many fans felt that their favorite movie or performer that failed to get a nomination were snubbed. They consider that a thing. And I just kind of want to talk about it with you guys. Do you actually think when somebody does not get an Academy Award nomination that they are snubbed? Or maybe even your favorites, when they don't get one, they are snubbed? Or is it just, that's just how it goes?
I don't like considering it snubbed, because for it to be snubbed, I had to have seen everything else. And it's impossible to see every single movie out there. I didn't even see all of the Best Picture nominees last year. So for me to sit there and say the one or two movies that I saw that were nominated out of the 8 or 10 or however many were this year, and say that it's a snub, that's not fair. It's. I mean, if you like a movie that didn't get nominated, I understand feeling bummed about it, but that doesn't mean that it's a crap movie. But on the same token, you can't really complain if you haven't seen the competition. Wasn't there like an Onion article that somebody posted on our group?
The one guy
that all he saw was the Kingsman sequel and was super pissed that wasn't nominated for a picture. Well, of course, the one movie you saw, you know, I don't know. We can't see every single movie. Aaron, I know you can. You and Jessica Farrell, you guys live at the theater.
We try. Yeah, we try. I am of that mindset that, unless you saw the movies, you can't really say that they didn't deserve it. I mean, you can champion whoever you want to champion. I think that's great. And a lot of genre movies never really get the love. I think it's great. Logan got a screenplay adaptation nomination. That's fantastic. I think it's the first one ever. And people should be like, bravo on that. But yeah, a lot of the genre movies never get nominated. And I don't consider it a snub. It's just not really what the Academy's shooting for.
If everything is a snub, is anything a snub? Let's get philosophical about this.
Wait, explain, because you lost me roughly when you said is.
Well, like you said, there's article upon article about how this was snubbed, that was snubbed, everything was snubbed. And if you get to a point where there are so many snubs, to me, the whole term loses its meaning. It loses its power, its impact, or anything else like that, because you can't make everything a snub. You can't make it. If everything is a snub, then nothing's a snub. It just is what it is.
That actually makes sense. If you overdo it, you're kind of you're diluting the meaning of it.
Exactly.
Okay. See, I would agree with that. When they say the 15 people that were snubbed at the Oscars, I'm like, there's only 5 nominations per category, people.
Right.
You can't snub that many people.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, isn't it art? I mean, isn't art subjective anyway? I mean, this is an academy of film watchers. That's a very select number of people that are watching these and picking their favorites.
Not film watchers, film makers. These are all filmmakers that decide who gets nominated.
Right.
So it's.
But I mean, it's their view. At the end of the day, don't get me wrong. I love watching the Oscars, and I watch it pretty much every year. But I'm not gonna. It's who cares? They get a big deal. But why is it gonna be considered a snub? Like, this one deserves it. Who cares? They like this one better than that one. Who cares? It's over. Deal with it.
I mean, I'm to the point where if I were an actor and somebody said, you can either get an Oscar or you can be in a Marvel movie, I'm going to be much happier about being in a Marvel movie.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. I've heard actors say that. You know, I'd rather be the star of Captain America than get an Oscar nomination. I mean, ultimately, I guess it depends on what your goals are. Is getting an award that might, I don't know, look good on a resume, is that really the goal here? Or are you trying to be a successful actor? You know, I mean, they can run hand in hand, but typically they don't always do. They rarely do.
Yeah, but I feel like I very rarely do it. And the classic actors are the ones that kind of are able to cross both boundaries, right? You're not going to have a lot of young actors. There's exceptions to every rule, yes. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to have a lot of young actors that are going to be highly popular by everybody and also get Oscar nominations. It's an elite class of filmmaking. And I'm sorry, but a lot of those movies that are nominated just don't look very fun to me. That's not something that I want to strive to go see. I want to go see the movies that I want to see. And that's why we have our, you know, movies of the year nominations and all that for ourselves, because these are our particular favorites. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't mean that we have bad taste. It just means we have different taste.
Well, and it's when you look at how many people, I mean, there are thousands of people, filmmakers that vote on these. They're not snubby. I mean, James Franco might've been snubbed because, you know, bad timing.
They didn't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Nope.
There's no way.
Nope. Bad time for him to wear a Time's Up pin, turns out. But I think that outside of that rare occurrence, I don't think typically it's a snub. I just think people get carried away with, you know, my favorite movie wasn't nominated. How many movies did you see last year? I saw 8. Okay. Well, yeah, see more. You know, maybe.
Well, can we talk about that? Like, what does they actually mean by a snub? Because I hear two different definitions in my head whenever you say it. One could be like where a critic is actually seeking out to avoid this person just because they have some personal vendetta or some personal reason that they don't want them. Or is it just they just got kind of ignored and lost in the shuffle of other things?
You know what I think typically what they mean is that an actor or people that they feel like gave a performance worthy of an Oscar was snubbed. Like Hugh Jackman did wonderful in Logan, did wonderful in Greatest Showman. He got no nomination. Some people consider that a snub. I just feel like his movies weren't really playing to the Oscar audience for the most part. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis, his nomination was given before he even, you know, showed up for work, I think, sometimes.
Well, but, him and Meryl Streep.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Meryl Streep, I get it. Daniel Day-Lewis, I don't. So,
I mean, how many years in a row has she been nominated? Do you know that number off the top of your head, Aaron?
She doesn't even remember what she's been nominated for at this point.
She just signed on for Big Little Lies so she could get Emmys instead. She's so sick of Oscars.
She's got too many Oscars.
Yeah,
she's got to vary up that shelf a little bit. You know,
I'm tired of it holding up these Oscars. I need an Emmy shelf. I got to get going. All right. Well, that's enough of that. I'm sure people are sick of Oscars. Let's move on to something cooler, maybe. Well, MoviePass has been talked about a lot. I mean, a lot lately. And I think they're going to hit 3 million customers this year, which is funny because I remember when they had like 30,000 last year. And I don't – this has been insane. But they're doing more than just the $9.95, see as many movies as you want. They're actually getting into – the movie business. They're investing in movies. They snapped up this heist flick, American Animals, for $3 million. What do you think they're doing here? Like, what is the plan?
It seems to me what they're trying to do is get the money coming and going. So they have a whole bunch of boobs who are paying the money to have a movie pass. Actually, I say that respect. I'm now a movie pass holder.
Are you?
And yeah.
Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard.
Yeah. So anyhow, they have a whole group of people who are willing to fork over money on a monthly basis. And so on top of that, buying movies that they can be part of the distribution on it, they can also start making money on the back end. So that what was new MoviePass when you first started out? Wasn't it like 30, 40 bucks?
There was a time it was $50 a month.
It was 50 at one, yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So to drop it down to 9 and then start buying up movies to do this with, it makes sense to me for them to actually start trying to make money both on the front end and the back end to try to even out what that score is. So, and on top of that, they actually can track what their clients are doing because they have this app and they can then see trends and buy into those trends. It's actually kind of brilliant.
I think they got a different plan in mind. I don't think you're going to like it.
Ooh, all right. Shake us up, Scott.
I think they're planning to fail.
What?
Hear me out. Hear me out. They're planning to fail. They know they're going to go out of business, but their goal in this is secondary from what you're actually thinking. They're going to get as many people on board with this thing as humanly possible to pay the $9.99 a month to see as many movies as they can, get them used to it, and then when they inevitably fail, then everyone is all of a sudden used to paying $10 a month for their movies, and now they have to pay $12 or $13 per movie. People are going to be like, forget you, I'm not going to the theater. And then all of a sudden, these theater chains are going to be like, okay, MoviePass, we got you. Come back, let's make a partnership, and let's make this happen.
I see what you're saying. I think that's a stretch.
That's a bit of a stretch. They're getting us conditioned. I'm already conditioned. I'm conditioned to paying my $10 a month, and I'm actually buying more concessions now because of that. I used to limit myself to my concessions based on my my Stubbs membership. Like whenever I had a free one come up, that's when I would get popcorn. You know what I mean? And now I'm actually probably spending more money on concessions. I know I'm spending more money on concessions, but I'm probably spending more money on concessions than I was on concessions and tickets before. So I'm conditioned to this $10 a month. Now I've got the popcorn cocaine in me, and when they take away that $10 a month,
I need a popcorn.
I'm going to go back and I can't not have my popcorn. So I'm going to go less because now I have to pay $12, $13 on top of my popcorn and whatever. They're conditioning.
I feel like there should be footage of Kevin Costner at some point throughout your argument. I really do, Oliver Stone. I just feel like there's...
It's the magic popcorn.
It's a heavy conspiracy theory that I just don't know if I can get behind. I see what you're saying. To me, it really feels more like what they're doing is they're trying to control the business because they have a captured market that they can they've said, well, what's the quote in the article that we read? The link is in the show notes, but the numbers add up. Flicks that get a push from the MoviePass app receive a 10% box office bump. Recent examples include Oscar hopefuls The Post, Three Billboards, and The Shape of Water. So I'm thinking they realize they have a captive audience that will go see the movies that they want them to see. They can make money off that by buying cheap festival films, putting them in a theater, and then pushing them there. They'll get concessions and maybe utilize that to bargain with the theater. I do think there's some truth to what you're saying. I just don't think it's quite the JFK level that you do.
Right. Well, they've already successfully bargained with a bunch of theaters to get $3 per ticket and a piece of the concessions. It's just not AMC, but they've successfully bargained with the smaller theaters to get that. So, I mean, that's more money they're making than just off of the $9.
They're not going to get it from AMC.
No, they're not.
They're not. It's owned by a gentleman from China who I believe is the largest theater owner it's the largest theater chain in the world. There are billions involved here. They're looking at MoviePass like, yeah, do what you got to do, man.
Yeah, that but they're going to be hurting when theater attendance goes down. No one's buying the popcorn cocaine anymore. There's no cheeks in the seats.
If you don't get popcorn, do you just fiend in your seat? Do you just freak out?
Dude, that smell, I walk in there. Arm. I do, man. I get bugs crawling all over me. You know what I'm saying? It's awful. Got to get some popcorn. And then take it home and put it in the microwave and let it sit for a couple of days so that butter soaks into it.
Oh, you're so gross.
So good.
How is it's lacquer, number one. It's not real butter. It's lacquer.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I mean, it's flavored lacquer. They get it at the paint store.
But it's delicious.
So crazy. You know, he's going to get confused for Saint when he dies because his body is just not going to decompose without all that fake popcorn butter.
Butter.
All right.
Fake butter.
Now we're moving on to Netflix. This is funny. It's not really about the Cloverfield sequel, but here's what they're doing. Netflix is in talks to take on the Cloverfield sequel, currently titled God's Particle. They're going to take it over from Paramount. This is the plan. something the studio just did with Alex Garland's Annihilation. Now, I don't want us to focus solely on Netflix and Cloverfield, but I think after many years of us talking about, we've been doing this for almost 6.5, 7 years, whatever the number is. We've been talking about this theatrical experience coming to people's homes, and every year it gets a little bit closer. But to me, this feels like we're on the precipice of a fundamental change in that experience. And I'm kind of curious, do you guys feel that same way? Are you worried? Are you happy you can just watch everything in your underwear now? What?
I would much rather watch a movie in the comfort of my own home when I want to, when I can pause it, when I can have the cheap snacks that I know that I bought and paid for at Walmart instead of $19 popcorn. I just like watching things at home on my own time with whatever distractions I choose to have, whatever reasonably priced snacks I prefer. There's so many rules I have to follow when I go to the theater out of respect. And I get it. I understand the respect aspect of it. But going to the theater is an ordeal for me, man. I'm not a stone's throw away like you are. I know you can just roll out of bed and you're in the theater parking lot. But, it's a good half hour for me to get to the theater, half hour home, half hour of trailers. It's a headache to go through it. If I could just watch it at home on my nice big screen TV, which I'm upgrading soon in the near future, if my wife is listening. And I don't know.
Wait, have we gotten this lazy to where the magic of movies, I don't want to have any inconveniences. I don't want to have to drive to the theater and have to walk inside and sit and wait.
It's not that I'm lazy, man. It's not that I'm lazy. It's just much more convenient. It's much more convenient for me just to flip it on at home and not have to worry about pissing somebody else off because I got to get up and pee or because I want to look at my phone.
Yeah, let's be honest. It's really just about your phone.
It's really not. It's part of it. But when I go to the theater, I turn it off because I made the mistake once, I think 5 years ago in a theater with you, checking a message because I was expecting something important. And my phone has not been on since.
And how is that my fault? How was it my fault? Because it's good etiquette. That's my fault? I don't know how that's my fault.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I've made the conscious decision to turn it off every time. And I want to watch the movies the way I want to watch it.
John,
you should know this.
John, don't you feel like he did just kind of like, I mean, the finger felt like my way.
Yeah, five years ago. I felt that breeze just go right past me directly towards you.
I'm just saying, that's the way it came out, man.
Maybe you're just too sensitive.
No, yeah, of the three of us. Johnny, where do you stand on this whole thing? Are you happy with this? I mean, I know you love your 4K, whatever, 85-inch TV.
Well, I mean, yes, I do absolutely love that. And my stance on this, is that over the years, going to the theater has always kind of felt like being Annie. And Daddy Warbucks has taken me to the theater, and it's a nice, awesome event. But over the years, that event has gotten, or that feeling has been harder and harder to reach for whatever reason. The theater I go to feels like that's too sticky on the floor or whatever. Whatever it is, that whole feeling of going to the theater with Daddy Warbucks and the dancing people has gone away. So when I get to go to the theater and it feels like that, I really appreciate it. I really enjoy it because it does feel more like an experience. It's an event, and I like that event feeling. But as you pointed out, I have an awesome TV, and I can have that theater experience at home. I can see things just as good, if not better, on my TV at home. The sound system is just as good, if not better, in some cases.
I will call so much BS on that argument. Your sound system does not compete with a theatrical sound system. Ever. Never. Never. There's no meh. There's nothing. It does not compare with it. It is scientifically impossible for it to compare with it.
You're talking about a sound system that is designed to take care of hundreds of people, as opposed to a sound system that is designed
and
to
that's fine.
Handle four.
Say you love it. Say it works great for you. But to say it competes, it's like the same sound system, if not better. What? No.
Well,
would leave your neighborhood. Like, there would be people. There would be moving vans, U-Hauls, and everything else because people would hate living next to you because your house was a booming sound system. It's an insane argument.
I'd be playing that THX intro as often as possible to get those people to move out.
You could be as happy as you want with it. It ain't better.
A loud stereo or a loud sound system is okay, but a yipping dog is a problem.
No, I think people should move if they have yipping dogs too. Just fine. Everybody with noise, get out of my neighborhood. That's why I go to the theater, because it's just movie. I don't have to hear other people's idiocy or idiocracy for that matter. So, yeah.
I do want to counterpoint my own point a little bit, though, too, because there are some movies that I really do want to see in the theater that I feel I do get that theater magic. And
yeah,
kind of bringing it back to the story itself, Cloverfield is a movie that I want to see in the theater, whatever the sequel is. And I'm still kind of curious as to what that is. I understand it's on Netflix and I'm going to watch it, but that is one that I wish were in the theater. That first one was amazing in the theater. That I'm not even big shaky cam, you know that. But
yeah, I think they even shot, I've heard that they've shot the fourth one, I think is what was reported.
Yeah.
They've already
reported it. It's already shot it.
Wow.
J.J. Abrams is just making secret movies and nobody knows. I think episode 9 is probably already done. He's just waiting for somebody to release it. It's done. I didn't answer this question. Here's what I think. I think it's a great that the theater experience has evolved for people that, I mean, let's be honest, man, we are a lazy culture. And I know people don't want to say that because for some reason people get naturally defensive, but it's true. When you have everything in the world delivered to you and you don't go outside, that's not exactly active. So I would go the other way and say it's kind of lazy or extremely convenient. If lazy offends you, you like an extremely convenient lifestyle.
I do like a convenient lifestyle.
That's fine.
I keep my life. You know, I keep my life very busy.
I'm talking to the listeners.
My time is very valuable to me.
I know your time is very special. We got it. I'm talking about the people listening. I absolutely understand where you're coming from. Personally, this is only personal. There's nothing they could do that makes home better than a movie experience to me. There's nothing that competes with the magic of movies. There's no scenario where watching a movie at home is better than watching a movie in a theater, because nobody respects rules at the home. I don't care how much you enforce them. There's always somebody that just, you know, hey, I'm done watching this. We're going to go in the other room. You go to a theater, nobody does that. Nobody's texting during the, in my movies, nobody's texting during the movie. I mean, all that stuff doesn't happen. It's the magic of movies, just what's in front of me, and I love it. Home theater is just never going to compete with that. I'm glad you guys are happy with it, and I'm glad the people that want that experience, the convenient lifestyle experience, are getting it. It's just not something I ever need. And I would
fine. Be that
so
way about
much
it.
More. Yeah. Because my theater sound is so much better than my home stereo. I guess I should upgrade.
You really should upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's not as good.
Well, it's science. His isn't either. He just won't accept it.
Well, okay. So let me rephrase it then. Mine is, for me, just as good of an experience.
That's
there you
perfect.
Go.
Perfect.
Just personal.
Perfect. I mean, it's still wrong, but I mean, at least I understand you, and that's all that matters.
It's perfect, but wrong. Can we get a t-shirt that says that?
Yeah.
Perfect, but wrong, Aaron.
The Hollywood Outsided.
There you go. Outsided?
Same difference.
All right.
I've heard it both ways.
We've got...
Did you just typo a quote?
I think so,
like
yeah.
An audible typo?
Our show name.
Who, me? Do something like that? No.
The Hollywood Outsided. You're like a caveman now. Did I just offend cavemen?
Yeah, probably. There's somebody out there that probably feels that way. Significant anniversary. We have this once in a while when there is something monumental that comes up. And Breaking Bad, I would say, is monumental. It turns 10 this month. It's a show revolving around a chemistry teacher stricken with cancer who turns to selling meth to support his family. We've talked about our love for the show in the past many, many times. So let's talk about why you think this show has kind of struck such a chord with the culture. I mean, so many shows are even trying to emulate it now. Why do you think it's still here, and why do you think it caught on so much, Scott?
For me, it's the good guy turned bad mentality. You know, anti-heroes are very popular in a lot of TV shows, but it was fun to see Walter progress from a geeky chemistry teacher to a badass drug lord. I mean, it was really cool because it felt like it could really happen. It was like a wish fulfillment, so to speak. Not that people want to be drug dealers exactly, because they understand that it's wrong, but you know, it's similar to movies like Casino or Scarface. You know, people fantasize about living life large and the excitement of getting there, doing something they're not supposed to, but those movies always felt like they were just like way beyond the realm of possibility for someone like us. Breaking Bad was very suburban. It had this suburban atmosphere that made it feel like it could happen to anybody. It felt close to home. It felt like this is something I could do. I mean, be honest. You've never like considered, okay, maybe you haven't. I have. I thought, you know what? If I wanted to do something like this, nobody would ever suspect me. I could get away with it. Because no one's going to do the geeky, nerdy guy that's wearing a tie to teaching fourth graders. Nobody's going to expect him to be a drug dealer. I could make some easy cash on the side.
I've never thought that. Honest to God.
Nope. No?
Nope.
Nope.
All right. I'm alone then.
Yes, you are.
But
stay away from those kids.
I think everybody should write this down so that when it happens and his house gets busted, we all saw it coming.
Right.
What's the timestamp on that? What's the what episode number are we?
This is 299, and we're going to call this Scott's Confession.
Pre-confession. It's a precog.
I like
right back to movies.
I like that you said suburban, because that was a really, I think, important catch, is that for too many of these TV shows and movies, and like The Wire and stuff like that, Sopranos is another one where you have a really big anti-hero. I don't think those really resonated so much because they never felt like this could be my life or this could be the life of somebody I know. Walter White and his family, very suburban, very normal, very typical. Nothing special about them. There's nothing really that stood out about them. They were like us, everybody listening. They were us. And he got that taste of power, that little taste of power. And he went from, what did Gilligan call it? Taking it from Mr. Chips to Scarface. And he slowly just craves more and more and more and more. And you could tell after a while, it's not really about the money. It's about the power. And I could see that. I could see somebody who's been stepped on most of their life and has a lot of pride issues demanding to have that kind of power and what it does. Absolute power corrupts absolutely and all that.
I mean, you guys said it really great. I mean, it really is about people watching somebody who is very close to somebody they know. You know, it's funny how you guys point out that he becomes this big time crime boss, where I always kind of thought of him as really bad at it. He was kind of good at it, but really he messed up a lot too.
Mm-hmm, he did.
And it was nice seeing the fact that he was fallible. He didn't step into this and was perfect at it 100% of the time. He was only maybe perfect at it 3-4% of the time. The rest of it, he kind of happened into whatever happened for him.
Oh, you're not wrong. He was best at cooking blue stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that was his forte. Yeah. He was learning as he was going and not and making a lot of mistakes.
He was really bad at everything else. But Scott, when you're doing your drug dealing, you're going to be really bad at it.
No, I'm going to learn from Walter White's mistakes.
Right. No. Well, I don't know, because I mean, I'm sure he looked at TV and said, "I'm not going to do that." Because.
Yep. Scott White. I've seen you bald. Right. You kind of look like him. Yeah.
Hey, my mom's maiden name is White. So there you go. Look at that.
Look at that. We were finding out you moved to New Mexico, the mecca of meth, apparently.
You find a pizza on my roof. You should be like, oh, I see what's going on, Scott.
Seriously, if you can fling a pizza on your roof, I find that impressive. I would probably applaud that skill.
A lot of people have done that, apparently.
Throwing the pizza on the people
on that house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they own it before? Like, are they the ones that have always lived there, or did they buy it after the show? Because if they bought it after the show, I don't feel so bad for them.
I think they owned it before. I don't know.
Well, I didn't have time to research. Sorry.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Somebody in the group will tell us. So
yeah, they always do when we're wrong.
Yep,
that's true. So you don't know, but I like how you were willing to almost make it seem like you might.
Yeah, I was gonna search it, but then I decided not to.
You're just gonna pull up property records? What the hell were you gonna do?
I used to be a property appraiser. I know how to do that.
Oh,
Zillow.com.
There's that too.
Nice. The other thing that I think stood out was I haven't seen some of the well-rounded performances that are in that show spread through so many characters of many TV shows. I mean, in the eternity of television. You know, it's not just Walt. I know Bryan Cranston got all the credit. Aaron Paul was fantastic. You had his wife, Skylar, was great. I mean, his son was great. His brother-in-law was great. Everybody on the show, just they had a real.
Ritter.
What's that? Yeah, Kristen Ritter. She was on there in the second season. Everybody had a real strong arc, and they had relatable character motives. Even the bad guys had relatable character motives. It was just a fascinating show to watch because they all felt like real people with real problems doing real bad things.
I'm going to add on to that because everything that you're saying is 100% true, but even that isn't my favorite thing about this show. My favorite thing about Breaking Bad is that they quit while they were ahead. Mm. That show was the perfect length. Like they did not stretch it out to 9 or 10 seasons like so many other television shows do, and I appreciated that so much. It was just the exact perfect amount of Breaking Bad that we got.
Always leave them wanting more.
Yeah, the funny thing about that story is if you go back and look at the ratings, it was not a successful show until I think it was season 4.
And then Netflix came along, yeah.
Yeah, when Netflix came along, and then they had season 5, which they split up into two seasons, eight episodes and eight episodes. And it actually increased, and it became almost, like, it came close in that final season to rivaling Walking Dead at the time. So it actually built to be one of the biggest shows on AMC that they'd ever had, and they still ended it because they felt like it was the right time. And that is commendable in this day and age where people milk the
hell. Bold move, Cotton.
Exactly. That's great. All right, well, before we get to our spoiler-free reviews of Open House and Hostels, Anna Polisi, an entertainment reporter and a friend of the show, he was recently at Sundance and caught a few films, including A24's acquisition, Hereditary, which everybody is talking about is the scariest movie ever or of the year, the last 5 years. You know, it's scary. It's really scary. So we got him on the phone to talk to us about those experiences, about those movies, and he's going to talk to us about what he thought about them. Real quick, take a listen to Anna Polisi from Rockford Register Star at Sundance. All right. I am talking to Anna Polisi, who is here from my hometown paper, the Rockford Register Star. He's an entertainment reporter for the Rockford Register Star. And you went to Sundance, correct?
I did. I went to the opening weekend of Sundance. I was there for Saturday, Sunday, and I flew back on Monday. So it was just a quick trip to cover the local documentary, Minding the Gap, which is about Rockford skateboarding until it really isn't, and it kind of segues into different aspects of life and fatherhood and family life and the ripple effect that domestic abuse can have. So I was really there to focus on that, but of course I had some downtime to maneuver around Park City and catch some other films.
Yeah, and you actually, or we're going to come back to this, but I just want to point out, you saw the scariest movie ever of this year. Hereditary, which we're going to come back to just because I think it's great because every year there has to be at least one or two scariest movie evers that come out of these festivals.
Right. Well, I guess it's the scariest movie by default that I've seen this year because I saw Insidious
it's January.
4 and Paddington. So I guess the pool for scariest is kind of limited. But I guess in any big pool, yeah, it would be one of the scariest movies of any year for sure.
So it was scarier than Paddington 2?
It was. It wasn't as sweet and tear-jerking.
That's too bad.
As Paddington, but...
So give us a little insight, because we've done South by Southwest and a couple other festivals and Comic-Con, but we've never actually been to Sundance. And I'm curious, what was your experience like? I mean, what did you learn for a first-time visitor to the festival? I mean, what did you take from it?
Oh, it was so much fun, and it was probably a little bit colder than South by Southwest.
Much.
But yeah, no, it was like a different cold. It was like not bitter, brutal cold, but it is here in Northern Illinois. It was a different kind of cold to where I was comfortable being bundled up. But I mean, other than that, I mean, also you had, you know, thousands of people descending on this small town outside of Salt Lake City. So maybe the body heat generated also made it warmer. I don't know.
When people are that close to movie stars, they tend to feel more comfortable in whatever weather they have.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, I can name drop who I saw a little bit later. But yeah, the experience was so cool. Obviously, it wasn't like me going wasn't about me. It was about this Rockford angle and covering it for the paper. But, you know, just from my aspect of, you know, someone who has been an entertainment reporter who's never attended Sundance. I mean, that was really cool to be there and be at the Egyptian Theater and to see everything going on. I mean, it's so crowded and so many people are there and everyone knows movies. Everyone can talk intelligently about film. They can talk intelligently about the industry. I mean, I went to 3 movies and each time I sat by, you know, I sat by a mother of two from Cape Cod, and then I sat by an aspiring actor in London at another one, and then I sat by a couple from Salt Lake City at another one. So you meet so many different people, and the film festival attracts so many different people that it's really just this experience just to meet so many people. That's why so many people also go to make connections and to find internships and full-time jobs.
And does it work very similar to how South by Southwest does, where you have there's a set film schedule and you just try to make the movies that you want to make and you have to wait in line? And
for me, it was, you know, I was there for essentially one reason, and that was to cover the Rockford film, Minding the Gap. And then I built my lunch and dinners and any other movies I wanted to see around that. Mm-hmm. But all the movies were sold out before non-Utah residents could get tickets. But occasionally they would, you know, randomly one or two tickets would open up on the website, and I would grab them real quick. So that's how I got tickets to Piercing and tickets, or a ticket rather, to Piercing and a ticket to Hereditary, just because they were open up. So I didn't have to do the wait list or anything. Yeah, that's definitely the Sundance experience. It wasn't necessarily my experience, but people want to get a jump start on some of the movies before they go mainstream. Part of the allure of Sundance is being able to do that.
Yeah, to drop the movie, name drop the movie before it becomes a name, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's start with three of the movies you saw. You saw Piercing, Mind the Gap, and Hereditary. Let's start with Piercing. What was Piercing about?
Piercing is based off a Japanese novel that was, I believe it was Japanese, a Japanese novel that was translated to English. It's from the same author who did Audition, if I believe, or it was from the same filmmaker who did Audition. I can't remember, but from the people who brought you Audition, mm-hmm, will certainly be on the poster whenever that comes out. It's Christopher Abbott, who played Charlie in Girls, and he was in It Comes at Night, and he was in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. You know, it opens up, and he's holding an ice pick over his child's crib, and he basically needs to go to a hotel and meet a call girl and kill her to get the sick side of him, to get it out of him. So he meets a call girl played by Mia Wasikowska. I hope I'm saying that right. From Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah.
And from Stoker.
Yeah. I know who she is.
And, you know, she's the call girl that he meets, but she has her own demons, and it just kind of becomes this weird, bloody, gory, psychological cat and mouse that I initially hated, and then I thought about it more, and I heard the cast and crew talk about it afterward, and I'm like, I'll play ball with that. Probably would never watch it again, but
it's disturbing.
Yeah, it was definitely disturbing, and you know, there are some scenes just go way out there. And the interesting part about going to Sundance is you go before these films are ever hit the mainstream. So there are no trailers, there are no posters, there are no tomato meters. you really can only go off of what's been released by Sundance or what the filmmakers decide to release on the film. And Piercing didn't really allude to anything like what I ended up seeing. And you know, just as I was getting ready in my hotel room to head out to the theater, the director posted an official photo. It was one of the few official photos, and it was of this eyeball with this lit cigarette coming toward it. And I'm like, oh, what am I getting into? I like, you know, shocking films. I like, you know, I like horror films a lot. So I was, you know, intrigued, and I didn't know I was going to get what I got. But it held my interest for the hour and 25 minutes it was on. So
now, Minding the Gap, if you want to find out more about that, go to rrstar.com.
Yeah, that would be the place to go. Yeah. Or look me up on Twitter, Adam Polisi, P-O-U-L-I-S-S-E. I'm tweeting everything, and I'll be following the film as it continues, you know, as it continues traction. If it ends up getting a distribution deal on TV or on PBS, the director, again, Bing Liu, he just won a Breakthrough Filmmaking Award on Saturday night.
Oh, wow.
At the Sundance Film Festival. Definitely a lot of buzz. Movie's getting great reviews, deservedly so. It's ranking in the top, you know, all the lists that the trade magazines make about the top 10 movies at Sundance, you know, Minding the Gap on every single one. So it could do some great things for Rockford. The story certainly doesn't end at Sundance. It'll certainly continue.
Oh, hometown hero. I love it. Good for him. That's awesome. I'll have to get him on here for an interview, and then he'll probably be like, you know, I don't do Rockford interviews. It'd be one of those deals, you know.
he's done them with me, so I don't know. I think he's a hard guy to catch. He travels a lot.
Put me in touch with him. I want to work that out because I think that'd be fun. So last one, okay, and it's only last. Certainly, you know, not least, but it's the one that I've heard the most about. I've heard this from every person I know that has gone to Sundance. Is Hereditary is scary as hell. It's terrifying. It's insane. And it's one of the best horror movies they've seen in a long time. Now, I preface that with, I hear that every year. If you follow film festivals, you hear that stuff every year. And it's a lot of times it can be true. but a lot of more often it's just hyperbole, and it's because they got to see it before we did, and then you see it and the hype kind of kills it. So where do you stand? You saw Hereditary. I don't know anything about it. Can you give us like a brief synopsis without really telling us anything?
Yeah, I will say the hype is justified. I really enjoyed it. All I'm going to say about the movie is that it's about a family that is dealing with some tragedy and a curse that runs through the family tree. I don't want to say anything else because I don't know what they're going to advertise when they start advertising it.
Let me ask you in this respect, was the audience visibly shaken? Were they scared? Did they seem like they were the most terrified they'd ever been?
We were all scared. We were having a blast. A woman was sitting directly behind me, and she screamed a couple of times, and that just sent shockwaves through everyone else. And there's like this one scene where it's a recurring noise, a mouse noise. I don't know what else to call it, a noise that you make with your mouth that recurs throughout the movie. And there's this one scene where it just randomly just comes out of nowhere, and it's so effective that it made her scream. And I jumped, and we were electrified. The audience was. I certainly was. People were screaming and laughing and creeped out, and nobody knew what they were getting into. And that's, I think when I watch it again, knowing what I know at the end now, because at the beginning, you don't know what you're watching. So I made the mistake of kind of watching it as a detective, trying to figure out what was going on. And when you have no idea where the film's going, I think clues that were dropped at the beginning or plot points that led into the end, you know, not knowing anything and not having any idea where it was going to go, where it went, I'm still in my mind trying to connect them all together. So I'm really excited to, one, talk with people about it who have seen it, to, you know, start a conversation, and also to see it again to really connect how everything connects.
That's awesome. But the hype is justified. It's not just typical trade hype.
Yeah, no, I would say so. If you remember, The Witch came out of Sundance, which actually you and I saw together.
Yeah, I remember that.
And The Witch was too effective for me, almost too good at being evil. The Witch for me wasn't fun. It was, I've compared it before to The Exorcist, although The Exorcist, you know, has some, you know, it's kind of a roller coaster ride. The Witch was just so, I just felt unclean watching it. Hereditary is a lot of fun, and I think the bigger the crowd, the more fun you're going to have. I would say the hype is justified. I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. The acting is so good. Toni Collette is in it, and she's amazing. I'm surprised she didn't get any kind of accolades for her performance. Alex Wolff is great in it. Yeah, the hype's justified. Now, the type of people who go see movies at Sundance are different than the ones who go see, by and large, they're different than the crowds that go to the Rockford AMCs.
No, you're right. They're definitely the art house crowd.
It is. And Hereditary isn't really that artsy. I mean, it's very much a mainstream horror. I mean, you get some creepy images. You get some really, really, really effective jump scares. You get some moments where everyone's on the edge of their seat. So it's not artsy in the way like The Witch is. I think it's going to translate well. I think it's going to be a really good conversation piece. But I could see Hereditary definitely riding this wave of justifiable hype to the theaters this summer.
Well, now we got three movies to watch. We got Piercing, Minding the Gap, and Hereditary. So I'm looking forward to that. And we got a little Sundance recap. Thanks for bringing that home to the hometown boys.
Yeah, no problem.
I love stuff coming out of our hometown. That's pretty cool. So
it's really good, yeah.
Where can people find you if they want to look you up on the Twitter again or your work?
Yeah, you can look me up on, if you type Adam Polisse, where there aren't that many of us, it's Polisse. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. Oh, and then, of course, rrstar.com. You can look for all of my articles there. I try to cover primarily entertainment, but I'm also always at the scene of the fires, the shootings, the court hearings, the occasional county board meetings.
That's entertainment. Look at this board meeting. Look what happened. Oh, look. They said stuff.
It certainly can be in this area for sure.
Well, thanks for coming, and definitely appreciate you filling us in. And now we know Hereditary is a real deal.
It is, absolutely.
Okay, thanks a lot, Adam. Now we are going to go to our spoiler-free reviews of Open House and Hostels. Now, if you're a longtime listener, we're doing reviews a little bit different to hopefully make them a little bit more conversational and entertaining, interesting for you guys to listen to, so it's not just a couple guys monologuing. So, if you're a new listener, this will seem exactly like it's always been. The first one is Open House, recently released on Netflix. After family tragedy, Logan is played by Dylan Minnette, and his mother, Naomi, Piercy Dalton, resign themselves to staying at a family member's home while it's being shown for sale. Almost immediately after arriving, strange occurrences begin in the house, which then lead to their lives threatened by an unseen presence. Now, I don't know if that's supernatural. I don't know if that's just a guy in the basement. I have no idea. But John, you saw this movie. The plot is pretty straightforward from what I explained. So the threat may or may not be supernatural. So my first question, as you're watching Open House, is it the kind of horror film that relies on tension and jump scares, or is it a gore fest? What kind of horror movie is it?
It is totally the kind of movie that relies on tension and jump scares. It's all about setting you up. It's all about giving you these wide open shots that you have to just look at everything on the screen just to know what's going on. And it's always something small. So they really do a really good job at building up the tension and really making you hunt for the scary that's happening. Because you can hear it happening. You just aren't necessarily sure where it's coming from. And it's really cool when you do finally nail it down and see where it is. And it really kind of freaks you out. It's pretty awesome how they pulled it off.
You kind of mentioned just now and in your written review, you talked about how definitely the directors, Matt Angel and Suzanne Coutte, I'm going to say Coutte because I'm going to pretend it's French. It sounds cooler. How they handled these wide angle shots. Why was that such a point that stuck out to you? Because, I mean, you were really fixated on it just a minute ago and also in your review.
Well, the thing that always gets me is when you present me with something I can fall into. So these wide open shots were very much something that I can get sucked into. I am in the shot. I'm sitting on the couch next to Dylan Minnette. And everything that's happening to him is happening to me as well. And that's how open it feels. That's how much you, even on my screen here at home, I felt like I was right there next to our actors. And that's actually a pretty great feat for them to pull that off, you know?
So it gives you a lot of space and it gives performances room to breathe kind of thing?
But I think it has more to do with using that open space to just drive people a little nuts because you really don't know where you're supposed to look. You don't know what you're doing. You don't, all you know is that something's happening and you don't know where it's coming from. And then it really lets the viewer feel exposed to it.
Okay. And lastly, you mentioned the performances were solid in your written review from the small cast, from Dylan Minnette, who's a standout as an everyman actor. I want to ask you specifically about him. Did his relatability help the film? Do you feel like you were more along for the journey because he was so relatable?
So Minnette's relatability is really key to this because it makes it easy for you to be like, well, I'm hanging out with this guy. He's pretty cool. His mom's all right. You know, that relatability makes it easier for you to fall into these big open shots, these big open scenes and be a part of the movie as opposed to just viewing something. And I think that being able to pull that off is what really helped this movie along and really sucked me into it. I think anybody could have done it, but Minnette just did a great job at it.
All right, fair enough. Now, what's your score for Open House of $10 is the full price of admission?
So yeah, my price for it is $6.
Okay. Now we move on to Hostiles.
All right, so I'm going to take this one over. Now, Hostiles stars Christian Bale as legendary army captain in 1892, who reluctantly agrees to escort a Cheyenne chief and his family to dangerous territory. Now, Matt Sattler, one of our listeners from our Facebook group, said Hostiles was a really powerful movie. You find yourself feeling desperate for the characters. The cast was great. The story was better. Aaron, do you agree with that sentiment?
No. I agree with part of it. I do agree that the performances in the cast were phenomenal. I really believe the performances were Oscar worthy. I mean, they were worthy of nominations. They got snubbed is what I'm saying.
And really?
Yeah, no. But Christian Bale is the best I've seen him in years. He really is. And Rosamund Pike, her entire arc throughout the movie is more brutal than the Trail of Tears from the ending. I mean, it's a horrible.
You just learned what that was.
I did. But I'm using it. I'm applying my knowledge to film critique. So it's a horrible, horrible journey that she has, and she plays the hell out of it, but she's still powerful and strong as the movie goes on. Like, her performance is phenomenal. But he
Can I
also
ask a question about that, though?
Well, hang on, because I want to go back to your point. He also stresses the story. The script is weak as hell. It's very predictable. There's nothing really that comes out of nowhere here. There's nothing that you haven't seen in Westerns before. It's a pretty by-the-numbers screenplay. It's just the performances and some of the violence that happens that really really work. No, I'm sorry. Go back to what you're saying.
I just want to go back to what you said about Rosamund Pike, and this is just kind of an add-on question that I have personally.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you have a Western and you say powerful female performance, I just kind of have this vision in my mind of just kind of the same old thing in terms of just like a pissed off, very stoic woman that raises her voice on occasion you know, and holds a rifle or something. What sets this performance apart from everything else I've seen in other Westerns?
I know what you mean, because in the Western, women are never strong, so therefore they kind of have the same type of performance.
Right.
It's not mm-hmm. like that. It's more a strength. It's an inner strength. It's a core. It's this horrible thing happened to me, and I'm not going to lose my sympathy for others. I'm not going to lose my belief that we will get through this. I'm not going to lose my resolve. So it's not a, I am now the strongest person on this team. It's not that kind of strength. It is an inner strength about somebody realizing they've been through hell, but they can get through it. They just have to push through it. It's really perseverance, and she just does it remarkably well.
All right. Now, this sounds like an Oscar caliber film, but it's not getting nearly the buzz that some of the other films are. Why do you think that is, and does it deserve to be considered among those ranks?
Only for performances. I think this is definitely made. I mean, you could tell watching it, somebody was in the background going, "That's the Oscar shot," because it just feels like it's trying to win Oscars. And Bale and Pike, I do believe, were worthy. Wes Studi doesn't really get as much to do. He's a great actor. He just doesn't get as much to do.
He was great in Mystery Men.
He's great all around. He's a really well-versed Mystery Men. That's what you go back to?
I think he had to stretch for that one.
Wow. He's like, I remember that
you
one
just,
thing.
You just rolled right through it like, he's great in everything. Like, did he...
Damn, I don't know where to come back from that. It's trying to be an Oscar-worthy film, and I just don't – it's not Best Picture. It's not – no, it's not. It's good. It's okay to be a good movie. You don't have to be great every time. Not everything's a home run. It's a triple. You know, it's a good movie. It's enjoyable.
Well, from what I can gather from hearing you talk about it and reading your review, which is available on thehollywoodoutsider.com, this story has the potential to be a shining light on social issues that we're still very much dealing with today. Is this a film that sends a message, or is it more of a history lesson and nothing more?
Oh, no, it's definitely a message. I mean, that's the guy in the back shouting, that's our Oscar shot right there. It's a film about tolerance. It's a film about forgiveness. It's a film about horrible things that people have done, we've done to each other, and we can move past it. Absolutely, it's a message movie, which is why it feels like Oscar bait, but it's still a well-told film. It's just that the performances do more for the movie than the script does. But there are scenes, I do want to say, there are some scenes of extreme violence, and they are very, very intense, and they are extremely well done. Like, I was on the edge of my seat and also a little fearful for the characters, and that's always a plus. It just, the pacing need to be a little tighter, and they need a little less message to make it work. There you go.
Well, Alexander from our group said that Hostiles was, and I quote, great start to 2018 and a truly great, well-told story, solid 7 out of 10. But I'm curious what your final verdict is.
650, so not far off.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool.
Not too far off. Okay, before we go on to our upcoming releases, we do want to thank our Patreon supporters. So thank you, thank you, thank you to all who donated at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. There are several tiers available if you'd like to support the show, and several will get you bonus episodes of the show, like Bad Movie Night. You'll get some behind-the-scenes host stories. There's a lot of stuff there. And we're currently giving away a Blu-ray every month to one lucky supporter. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Scott, what's coming up?
We've only got one real big one coming out to theaters, and that is Winchester, The House That Ghosts Built, which comes out on February 2nd. Excuse me. This is an eccentric firearm heiress played by Helen Mirren, who believes she is haunted by the souls of people killed by the Winchester repeating rifle. If I'm not mistaken, Sean last week talked about this one quite a bit. That's one of his favorites of the year, if not his favorite.
Mm-hmm. It's correct? One of them, yeah. He said he's been in the Winchester house, if I remember right.
Right, it's like across the street from where he grew up or something like that, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only real big theatrical one, but we got three video on demand releases. The next one is Braven, which also comes out on the 2nd. Jason Momoa stars as a logger who defends his family from a group of dangerous drug runners. Also, we've got Victor Crowley, which comes out on February 6th, also on video on demand. 10 years after the events of the original movie, which I didn't know there was an original
Hatchet. It's from the Hatchet series. Hatchet 1, 2, 3, oh, and then, yeah.
Okay, because I looked it up and I could not find a movie called, well, it doesn't say Victor Crowley 2, so anyway. After the events of that original movie, Victor Crowley is mistakenly resurrected and proceeds to kill once more. It's a very descriptive synopsis. And lastly, on video on demand, on February 6th, is Woody Woodpecker.
Who the hell dug Woody Woodpecker back up?
The hyperactive, redheaded bird enters a turf war with a big city lawyer wanting to tear down his home in an effort to build a house to flip.
What? Yeah. Is that really the story? That's awesome. I like it.
That's really the story. Are you surprised?
Nope.
Come on. What else would you do with Woody Woodpecker?
I'd make it a kid's cartoon. They'd probably want to see it, maybe.
Couldn't they just do Over the Hedge 3 instead?
Oh, man. I liked Over the Hedge.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, Over the Hedge was really funny.
Woody Woodpecker was great when I was a kid. I watched that show all the time. I ain't ashamed of it.
I watched it when I was a kid. But yeah, I don't want to see it now. So anyway, of these four movies, which of these are you guys most likely to see this week? John, let's start with you.
I'm thinking Braven.
Yeah? Momoa action?
A little Momoa action, you know, the dad trying to protect his kid in the woods. Why not? Momoa action, Braven.
All right. Aaron, what about you?
Probably Victor Crowley. Yeah. I didn't want to see it. I was like, man, I gave up on Hatchet like three movies ago. Cause I love the first Hatchet. I really love it. It's one of those horror movies that kind of harkens back to the 80s slasher flicks. And that's my bread and butter, man. I love that. That's my jam, as the kids say, or the kids in the 90s said. And you're bringing that back. I want to check it out. And it looks stupid and fun in a ridiculous way. So I definitely want to check it out. But now I kind of want to see Woody Woodpecker because I love Woody Woodpecker.
What?
I love Woody Woodpecker. I love the cartoon.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't kill my joy.
Man, pickings are slim this week, guys. I'm not going to lie. There's not a whole lot here that interests me, but if I had to choose one, I'm going to go with Winchester just because I think that story kind of intrigues me a little bit. I like the idea of this woman thinking that she's being haunted by everybody that was killed by her husband's weapons. I don't know.
That's kind of cool.
And plus Helen Mirren. Has she been in a bad movie? Red 2, maybe?
Yeah, she's been in lots of them. She takes paychecks just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Michael Caine spend the weekends like counting their mansions.
For me, if you know Sam and Dean showed up in Winchester, I'd be all about watching that.
Wow, John, I just want to point out that was such a stretch to make that joke work, and it still hasn't.
What? That was no stretch. I'm telling the truth. If Sam and Dean were in Winchester, I'd be all about it.
You can't keep doing it until it works. If it doesn't work.
Watch this. We're gonna go for the rule of three. So if like Sam and Dean showed up.
Rule of three only works if it was funny the first two times. You can't make two bomb jokes and then do it a third time and then magically it's funny.
Well, let's just wait till Tom Holland swings in.
I see what you did there. All right. What's this movie, John? What's this movie?
You know what? First, before I get into what's this movie, I just want to thank my brother Scott for having my back.
You're welcome, buddy.
All right. Each week, we either play a clip or recite a scene suggested by one of our hosts or listeners. If you know what the movie is, email feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.org. Or you can hit us up through the contact tab in the app, and we'll give you a proper host shout out in the next episode. Last week's clip was Aaron's, and he picked Real Genius. Those who got it right were Nate Bruce and Manny Perez. Good God. Good going,
done
guys.
That one before.
No, I recited this time. That was different.
Yeah.
It wasn't an audio clip. Okay. I reenacted it.
Okay.
Because I've always
quite honestly, Jesus. Can you do Real Genius too much?
No. Mm-mm. It's like Clue, man. It's just infinitely quotable.
The one where you like sliced off ice for quarters in the vending machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I love that.
Have you seen this movie, Scott?
I have. That's at the end where the popcorn and I am. This is Jesus. You're touching yourself.
Stop touching yourself, Kent. Now I gotta go watch Real Genius. Yes, I love that movie.
All right, so moving right along. This week, it's Scott's chance to confuse us, and here's your clue. Scott?
You're on TV, bro. You're on TV. You're on TV, bro.
So what? You keep saying that.
So you're on TV, bro. Go work in a bank or something if you don't want to be cool to people.
Whatever. Just, can you get out of my face? Can you get out of my face?
Asshole.
You want to say that to my face?
Thought you wanted me to get out of your face.
Okay, now we are on to our From the Outside In topic. Yeah, it's at the end of the show now. What? So this week, we're going to do a reimagining of last year's topic, where last year we saved the world by demonstrating that the most effective ways to defeat an iconic movie villain were in our hands, and we used them. This year, we're the villains. So we're going to identify the best way to defeat some of the most iconic movie heroes in history. So I guess I want to ask you guys, if you were a megalomaniac bent on global domination, are there any heroes right off the bat, besides the ones that we're going to talk about, that you think would be the most difficult to defeat?
Superman.
Superman. That was going to be my answer. I mean, how do you defeat Superman? Unless your mom's name is Martha.
That's forever funny.
And you're just like lucky. Hey, what do you know?
That's forever funny. Yeah, I mean, kryptonite, obviously, right?
Yeah, we're going to get some kryptonite. It's not like
eBay.
It's easier to get plutonium than it is kryptonite.
eBay.
Well, supposedly.
Can you get that on Amazon? I mean, you can get everything. Like, can Alexa order me up some kryptonite? Alexa.
Alexa.
Give me some kryptonite.
Yeah, tomorrow delivery, please. Thanks.
Superman's dead.
Yeah, we're good. I got kryptonite coming tomorrow.
He's dead. Sorry, Supes.
Right. Wow, that was fast.
Yeah, I always wonder, like, what would be the first one? And Superman is the first one that came up to my mind, but that's not any of the five that we're going to go through. Here are the five. We're actually going to tackle Iron Man. We're going to say how you defeat Iron Man. Harry Potter.
I want to tackle Iron Man.
Wait, what?
I don't want to tackle Iron Man. He's made of metal.
I don't understand why that would be a problem. Oh, it would hurt you?
Yeah. Oh. Why would that not be a problem?
Because Scott's kind of soft and squishy, and tackling metal will hurt.
I thought he was saying he wanted to, which would be understandable. He's a handsome man. That's what I thought he was going for. We have Iron Man, Harry Potter, Batman, Luke Skywalker, and James Bond. James Bond. And I don't care which version of Bond you pick. Just you have to defeat the man. So we're going to start with Iron Man. And we're going to go John, me, Scott. So John, you start. What is your master? And then we'll have some listener comments on how they think. It's always in the Facebook group. If you ever want to participate, you can join Facebook and go to the Hollywood Outsider and you can participate in the week's topic. John, how would you defeat Iron Man if you are a master criminal?
All right. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
I am going to collect a box. No, I'm not going to do that. All right. So, this is what I'm going to do. I am going to hire Handsome Rob, Left Ear, Charlie Crocker, and most importantly, the Napster himself, Lyle. And for good measure, I'm going to throw Bane in there with me. And we're going to really just ransack Tony Stark's life. We're going to steal his company away from him. We're going to steal his suits away from him. And then he's going to have nothing but himself. No money, no nothing, no Iron Man suit. And we take away his one real effective superpower, which is the fact that he's rich.
All right. And by the way, when all three of us go, we're going to decide who has the best plan. So hold tight for that. Good plan, John. Mine, to me, obviously, the only way to defeat Iron Man is through a mix of ego and alcohol, right? Because he loves himself and he loves drinks. So I say you throw a party in his honor because he's going to show up. The Tony Stark is amazingly handsome gala or something like that. Then he shows up and you spike his booze. You spike all the booze, every drop of alcohol in the place, because he'll drink something, maybe everything, but that way you got the bases covered. Who cares if everybody else goes, you know, just they pass out. So what? Then when he passes out, you implant an explosive on his person that only goes boom upon impact of any kind, because you want to watch the destruction of Iron Man, right? So once he passes out and you put that explosive on him, you take him in his drunken stupor to the one place no drunk guy in drivable machinery should ever be, the Autobahn. Then you stand back and just watch the destruction.
It's a very complicated solution there.
You know what? Mm-hmm. He's a complicated guy, and I want him dead. So that's how you do it.
You know, my solution is much more simple, and I'm shocked that I'm the last person to think of this.
Okay.
How has no one suggested just hiring Magneto? Case closed.
All right.
Done. You don't need anything else. Magneto will take care of Iron Man. His name is Iron Man.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
You're very disappointed, John. You're like, man, kind of mad I didn't think of that when I had Bane and all these other bitches, but I didn't have Magneto.
Well, I think he's right that we overcomplicated it, but I mean, he's also kind of lazy about it too.
Not lazy. Exactly. It's just that's the simplest, easiest solution.
That's a convenient lifestyle. It's convenient. Yes.
Yeah. I work smarter, not harder, John.
Oh. Hey, right. Alexa, order me a Magneto.
So let's take a vote. Whose plan works, John? Who's your vote? I assume yours.
Well, I mean, mine's pretty good, but I mean, really, I can't argue with Scott's.
I can't either.
Here you go. 1 point for Scotty. 1 point for Scotty.
All right, we've got some listener picks for Iron Man 2, so let's do the same order, John. You want to start with Brent?
Brent Jones. Iron Man seems like the giant magnet. Seems like a giant magnet like they used in Breaking Bad episode would do the trick.
Yeah. Same idea, pretty all much.
Right. Angela Lee Wallach says Rust.
What are you can't just like throw rust at him.
That's going to take so long. Why are we going to be waiting?
We're going to kill Iron Man in 40 years. It's going to be great.
We're going to have to move him to the Midwest and then get him soaked and then drive him around. Yeah. All right.
And then let him not change suits in 40 years. Imagine the funk going on inside there.
Yeah.
Andrew Jeeves says, give him a lot of booze.
See, we can work together, Andrew. I think we can work this out because my Autobahn plan is remarkable, I must say.
Scott Cargaro, EMP, short art the suit. Not only can he not fly, but he can't move. Do it while he's flying, and you turn him into an impressive lawn dart.
Brian Lauer, he says, an EMP and then a shotgun. I don't know. Would the shotgun really go through that metal suit? I don't think so.
Well, if it's not power, I don't know. Yeah, I still think the metal would protect him from a shotgun. Shotguns honestly aren't that powerful. But, you know, I mean, it's their spread that is what makes them more of a problem.
They only really help you if you are fighting deadites.
Right.
It's science. You can't really argue. All right. Our next one is Harry Potter. John, how do you defeat Harry Potter?
All right. So I think the way to defeat Harry Potter is take away some of his power. And really, the power behind Harry Potter is that he is, quote unquote, the boy who lived. He's the chosen one. And, well, there was another chosen one or somebody else who could have been just as chosen as Harry Potter, which was Neville. So I would start a rumor that Neville was actually the chosen one. And after so many years, it would actually start picking up steam and it would have effectively dilute anything that Harry's got going on for him.
I love it. Yeah. You're like going to use social media against Harry Potter.
I'm going to go with totally Russia on this.
Allegedly.
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 We both.
All right. My plan for Harry Potter, and I think it's easy. You hire Agent 47. That's Hitman for you people that don't know. And you hang on, you tell him to wait until Harry is walking through a courtyard or something alone, and then you just snipe his ass. He sucks at magic, so without his friends around, he's just begging for a pine box. That's how you do it. Done.
Okay. Well, I went simple with our last one, but I went a little more complicated this time around. So, you guys remember in Harry Potter when he had that mirror that he could see his parents in?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So, here we do. We take that mirror, remove the glass, and replace it with that two-way mirror that they use in police stations when they interrogate witnesses.
Okay.
Right? But this glass is also special because it doubles as a monitor so we can digitally impose his parents' video image on the mirror. So as soon as he gets close to try to talk to his parents, boom, he's got a lot more than a scar to deal with after a bullet to the head.
Damn. I think we both are savages, and John is just trying to not hurt this child. So
Leviosa that bitch.
I mean, you guys really wanted to kill him. I just rendered him inert.
And you did it through classic high school objectivity. I like it. You know, that's a classic high school plan. That's a mean girl plan.
Totally.
Yeah, it's so fetch. I'm going to side with John. I think John's plan is the best because no one dies, and I like that.
John, what do you think?
I mean, your two plans are nearly identical with sort of, I mean, they both involve bullets to the head. So, I mean, how do I really discern between the two of those?
He's voting for himself is what he's saying.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I was going to vote for you too, John. So
all right. There you go. All right.
You got one.
You got one.
I got one.
Scott's got a point.
That'll probably be my one.
Scott's got a point. You got a point. The listeners, I'll start with Anna Maria Germa. I love Harry Potter, but all you have to do to defeat him is separate him from his support system and his friends. Then no fancy magic. Just poison his butterbeer or something.
I like that.
Fair.
Fair.
All right. Brett Jones says, Harry Potter, a couple of hot muggle co-eds, and a kegger.
Wow.
Nice.
Is he legal?
Really nice.
What age is Harry Potter when this goes down? Because I don't know if
he was an adult.
Comfortable.
He was an adult by the time the whole thing finished. So he was still running strong by the end of it. He's not down yet.
Okay.
God. Yeah, middle-aged Harry Potter needs some fresh meat.
I'm just saying he's in school. So, I mean, I don't know. This plan is a little dicey, Brent. It's dangerous. I don't know if I like it.
Andrew Jeeves, separate him from his support network. Which, all right, so everyone seems to so far be agreeing on the fact that Harry didn't do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, he didn't.
Yeah, I think that's there's not much to argue with that.
Mm-mm. Right.
It was like eight movies before he did anything. It was always his friends that bailed him out. Yeah, that's a fact, Jack. Scott Cargaro says, break his wand. Okay.
Didn't that happen? Did that happen?
That did happen.
I said it did happen. Didn't stop him.
Bad plan, Scott. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
And I know it because I just watched those movies in a day. Brian Lowry says, screw magic and use a gun. He ain't Neo.
I love that one. I like that one a lot.
Emily Calgaro, the only one I can truly answer to this is Harry Potter. And that is an easy one. Literally just remind him he's Harry Potter. He'll whine himself to death. Love the series, but I'll take any opportunity to make fun of Harry Potter because he's really not that great.
Ouch.
That's kind of hurtful.
Yeah. That's kind of what we were all thinking.
I like Harry Potter. I just don't think he's useful. If he's the chosen one, let's choose somebody else. Can we get a new lottery system? This isn't working out well.
He's really just really good at getting his friends killed is what he's really good at.
Yeah. You know what? If they were smart, they would have found a really magical, they would have gotten Hermione a lightning scar or just got her a tattoo of a lightning bolt and said, oh, we had this wrong. It was her the whole time. Cause she gets stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good point.
All right. Batman.
All right.
What's your solution to bring down Batman?
All right. So this is what I'm going to do for Batman. You guys ready?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to hire Handsome Rob, Left Ear, Charlie Crocker, and most importantly, the Napster himself, and for good measure, Bane. And not only are we going to
wait.
What?
Same
what?
Plan. I got it. I see where he's going. Billionaires. I get it.
Because, you know, he's rich.
Go ahead. Finish your plan, which feels like it might be Xeroxed. Wait, I think we already heard your plan. All right. Yeah. So mine, we're going to lose John. I just know it. I think the easy answer would be Martha, but, you know, who hasn't tried to throw that one out there? So I think killing Batman would be easy. Or actually wouldn't be easy, now that I think about it. Killing him wouldn't be that easy. So instead of killing him, break him. Kind of similar to John, but it's a different one from his Iron Man plan. I think he fancies himself a hero. So you frame Bruce Wayne for the murder of Commissioner Gordon. You set up a dinner party. I'm big on having parties for billionaires. Big fan of it. You wait until Bruce puts down a champagne glass. Then with gloves on, you grab it. You fill the same glass back up, but you throw in some poison. Then you hand that glass to Gordon. So he is going to be drinking after Bruce. So hopefully he won't have any, you know, lip fungus. And then you hand that glass to Gordon in a commotion of sorts, so he doesn't really know. They don't have video of you handing them that glass. And then when it kills him, the only prints in the glass are Gordon and Bruce Wayne. And then Bruce Wayne is convicted of murder.
It's interesting.
That's where I'm going. Bring Batman down.
Well, I'm apparently going a lot more morbid than you guys are with all of these, really. I know you killed Harry Potter as well, but here's my thing with Batman. He obviously needs therapy, right? There's no doubt that Batman needs therapy. So what you do is you swap out his usual therapist with a hypnotist who puts him under. The idea here is that the hypnotism makes him think he's seeing his parents in random places, kind of like Scarecrow style. He would even relive their murder in his head occasionally, just randomly. That's his one true weakness. and me as a supervillain would exploit that distraction to subdue him and kill him. And that is important. There's no locking him up in an unlockable place while I monologue. He's dead as quickly as possible.
I like it.
Mm.
Yeah, I like it. Interesting. John, what's your vote? Which of the three is the best one? Or two and a half? What?
I don't know. I'm going to have to say Scott.
I'm with Scott too. Yeah. You get 2 points, brother. Yep.
Woo. Yeah. I was going to vote for you, Aaron. I like your Commissioner Gordon.
Son of a bitch. I take mine back. I'm voting for me. Someday. All right.
Well, let's go to the comments and we'll start with Brent Jones. Brent Jones says, for Batman, an IRS audit to freeze the Wayne funds.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah. Angela Lee Wallach says, talk about his mother.
What's your name? Say that name again.
Is it my name, mother? Is it my mother?
That's all I hear when he's like, he's a grovelly, nasally voice. It's just not very, it's not healthy. Andrew Jeeves, tip off the DEA or ATF that he has illegal items and then watch them raid Wayne Manor from top to bottom, eventually finding the Batcave. Is it really going to be that easy to find the Batcave? Because if so, he sucks as Batman.
Yeah, there's a bit of a hole in this plan.
I like the idea, though, of like looking at his financial, because where is he getting, what's he doing with all this money? There's got to be receipts,
right?
I like the tipping him off, too. I think you'd have to draw him a map to the Batcave or something.
Or give him a key.
Yeah, here's the key. I just got the bat key.
A bat key, yeah. All right, Scott Calgaro says, using guns isn't thinking big enough. Think like the Mandarin in Iron Man 3. Missile strike on Wayne Manor, followed by bombing run, accompanied by more missiles, capped off by ground assault. Make the rubble bounce. Overkill is underrated.
Wow.
You guys thought I was morbid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's raffle stomping the hell out of Batman that way.
Somebody's got a Batman issue.
Right. Brian Lowry, he wears a rubber bulletproof suit. So you get a flamethrower and a chainsaw, hire some hard pipe-hitting MFers, and go medieval on them.
Yes. I love that.
Can we vote for that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just automatically vote for that one?
I'm changing my vote.
Let's have Pulp Fiction Batman. I like it. Michael Bonovich, convince the others that Batman is a really bad villain. I think they probably think he is. Batman will take them all out for you. And as for taking out Batman, you have a way to destroy the universe. All of them? I don't get it. What am I reading?
All the DC universes.
You're getting everybody at once, the good guys and the bad guys.
Oh, okay.
Well, in this case, Batman is a bad guy, but you get it.
I get it now.
I think he's a Marvel fan.
We don't talk to those guys. Those movies are good. Justice League was great. I said it. I don't care. All right, Luke Skywalker. Now we're on Luke Skywalker. We got Luke Skywalker and James Bond left. What about Luke Skywalker, John?
All right. So this one was a hard one for me to figure out. And the best thing I can think of is forcing to drink a gallon of blue milk.
What?
Have you ever tried to drink a gallon of milk?
Yeah, when I was in college.
It's next to impossible.
Will that kill him or will that disable him? Will that remove his forcedom?
It worked in 7.
Oh my God. That's your plan, though. Like you're holding.
That's my
to
plan.
It?
That's okay. What I'm going with. That's the box of flies this year.
I got a feeling you're probably going to be dead. Luke Skywalker, I think, first off, apparently all you have to do is be a student and suck a Jedi training, and you could probably break him. But I got to have a better plan. So Luke's a Jedi, right? The most magical person in the universe, essentially. You guys agree?
That's what I heard.
Okay. How do you defeat a Jedi? You have to make them look weak. You got to break their spirit. So you force them to give up on their own. Because I don't know if you can actually beat them. You have to force them to give up. Agree with this?
Okay.
All right. So how do you do that? Blackmail. That's how you do it. What you do is you get pictures of him kissing his sister.
You son of a bitch.
And then you send him then you send him copies. You tell him to stay out of your business. You stay out of whatever you're trying to do, whatever evil you're trying to do, or those puppies are hitting the internet. Time's up, Luke. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you stole my damn idea, man. But the only thing I need to take down Luke Skywalker is my phone. Because what's on that phone? a video clip from The Empire Strikes Back that plays on loop over and over again. As soon as he gets close, I show it to him and I scream, "You made out with your sister, man!" When he bends over and starts retching, I shove my lightsaber in his back. Case closed.
Wow. He still lives in mine. I'm just pointing that out.
Yeah, I killed him. I killed him.
All right, John, what's your Voight? What's your John Voight?
Can I give you each half a point for having the same plan?
Sure. Hop on this runaway train. Let's do it.
All right. You each get a half a point.
There we go.
All right. Well, I'm voting for me. So that gives me a point and a half.
I'm voting for me then, too. I get a point and a half as well.
I guess it's a tie. All right. Well, I'm just saying John, really, he stole my idea. You want to split it? I mean, it feels like he stole it.
All right. So you get 2/3 of a point.
I win.
Wait, what?
Shut up. You got 2 points. Let me have something.
You can't have half a point.
I got 3/4. He just changed it. I win. All right. James. Oh, wait, we got some listener comments on this one. Sorry. Luke Skywalker.
Yep, so Nate Bruce says, "I'd use a box of fly on all of them, but to kill Luke, find a creature who he can't use the force on, and he's a goner."
Who can't he use the force on?
His sister? Don't get me started.
His sister. Or is that what it was? I don't want to talk about that. Seems uncomfortable. All right, Brent Jones. Wow. Luke Skywalker, adopt the Dread Pirate Robots approach.
Robots?
Roberts.
Roberts. Damn it, dude.
That's the opposite of Ron Burgundy, the shit out of this.
Adopt the Dread Pirate Roberts approach. No matter what he does, someone comes after him in a Vader suit to bring up his daddy issues. I'm sorry I got that. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
Dread Pirate Robots. I want to listen to that podcast.
Continue.
Angela Lee Wallach says, cut off his second hand.
Oh, I'm on board. That's great.
Cut off his first. Again.
Andrew Jeeves, use the Yislarmy. I can never really pronounce that word right. While fighting him, stripping him of the force. See, that's there you go. Creature who doesn't have the force. Not only does it not have the force, but it takes away the force from Jedi. Wait,
how do you pronounce that word again?
Yislarmy, Yislamy, I don't know.
What is that?
Yisalamir.
Yisalamir, whatever. They're little like worm type creatures that hang out in trees. They're from the book universe.
Those don't exist though, do they?
Is
that canon?
It's not canon. You can't kill Luke with it.
It's more canon than episode 8 was.
Oh, right.
Damn. Scott.
You know, it's Chewbacca's fault that we...
We know that. We talked about it.
Wait, what?
Long story. We'll come back. Chewbacca's the reason that the canon doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Okay.
They couldn't excuse some stupid thing that Chewbacca did. Nobody cares.
They killed him in the books, they didn't want to kill him in the movies.
Yeah, one of those. Who cares? It doesn't exist anymore. Throw your books out. It's fine. All right. Scott Calgaro said he's a freaking Jedi. You're screwed.
This is where Scott draws a line to being like, I can't do anything. I got nothing.
How about break his lightsaber?
And lastly, Brian Lowry says, hire Deadshot because unlike stormtroopers, he won't miss.
Damn.
That's kind of a really good point.
Yep. All right. Last one's James Bond or Bond.
All right.
James Bond.
You guys ready for this?
I don't know. So
I'm going to hire handsome. I'm kidding. So. It would have been funny. Anywho.
Would it?
All right. So I got an awesome plan for this. This one is very devious to me. But what I'm going to do is because I am a megalomaniac spy master kind of dude, I've got an army of hot spy chicks, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take the lipstick poison that the Sands use in Game of Thrones and dilute it down so that it doesn't actually hurt anyone who's wearing it. But all these chicks, I'm going to just send them in a single line towards James Bond and have them all like jump his bones. And after so much exposure to all these people wearing that lipstick, the poison lipstick that the Sands use in Game of Thrones, he's going to have so much of it in him, it will eventually kill him. He's going to thank me for it, but he'll be dead.
Wow. Wow. That was extensive. Extensive. I liked it.
Finally.
Yeah. Scott's like calling you a bitch. All right. I say I've actually got two surefire ways. One, you can send a prostitute with.
You can only pick one.
Oh, come on.
And I think I should go first this time.
Nope. All right, so I'll do my other one then. You hire a mute supervillain to go up against him because mutes don't monologue. So once they catch him, they just kill him.
Mutes don't monologue. That's actually kind of brilliant. I think we got another t-shirt for you, man. Mutes don't monologue. Aaron Peterson, the Hollywood Outsider.
Hollywood Outsided.
Hollywood Outsided. I'm sorry. Hollywood Outsided. You just got Hollywood Outsided.
I think we're going to get some letters about that one.
You just got hoed.
Can you tell me that they do? I don't think so.
You just got hoed. There's going to be a picture of like an actual yard hoe. The quote on it, you just got hoed. The Hollywood Outsided.com.
Anyway. Are we going to start just throwing out ideas for t-shirts at this point?
Yes. Yes, because you're the artist.
Scott wants a t-shirt wall. That's what he wants.
Exactly. All right, my idea. You're going to throw a Bond girl at him with the worst possibly imagined STD imaginable. The rest is pretty much self-explanatory. He can't resist. He's going to walk home with a clap. Done story.
Did you think by demonstrating it, it makes it more effective? Is that the plan?
It worked for Robin Williams. Worked for me.
Good call. That was actually my first plan that I had, prostitute with STD, but I had to drop it. Good for you. Smart plan.
Yeah. Was a good plan. I vote for, what was yours again, Aaron?
Mutes don't monologue.
I'm sorry, John. I have to vote for Mutes Don't Monologue.
Yeah, I'm going to have to vote for Mutes Don't Monologue, too, because that's just funny.
Yay! Okay, now let's go to our listener picks for James Bond.
So Nate Bruce says, to kill Bond, use Goldfinger method of trapping him, but don't let him talk his way out.
I just want to point out Goldfinger lost.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he let him talk his way out. That's kind of his point.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I redact my statement.
All right, Brent Jones. By the way, I can't see Brent Jones' name in print without thinking Bridget Jones for some reason. I don't know why that is. Sorry, Brent.
I'm sure he's happy about that.
I'm sure he's like putting his lipstick on going, that mother.
No, I just mean like I see it and I think I almost say Bridget Jones, but instead I say Brent Jones. Anyway, Brent Jones says, a vat of sharks with frickin' laser beams on their heads. If not available, a vat of ill-tempered, mutated sea bass. I love that movie so much. We couldn't get the frickin' laser beams with frickin'.
That's another quotable movie. That's like right in line with Clue and Real Genius. Like Austin Powers, the first two. Oh.
I'm really quite hurt down here.
I eat because I'm unhappy, and I'm unhappy because I eat. John, you can take it.
All right. Angela Lee Wallach, take away his looks.
Well, how do you do that?
Yeah. Like
Seven style again?
How do you do that? Throw acid in his face? What do you do?
Freaking acid.
Andrew Jeeves, when capturing him, strip him down to his boxers and take away anything on his person. Also, no gadgets.
Didn't they do that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some kind of gadget showed up his ass. There's got to be, right?
What? Well, in Casino Royale, they kind of stripped him down to absolutely nothing.
Yeah. They knocked his nuts with a, oh my God, that scene just makes me ache to think about it.
He was washing my balls. You're washing my balls.
Scratching my balls.
To the left.
Yes, that's it. Oh, that scene is so good. So good.
So good.
Mads Mikkelsen, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, it was, yeah.
That's my favorite of the Bond movies, of the current Bond movies, by the way. By far.
By a mile, yeah. It's way better than Skyfall.
Yep.
Let's see. I'm up, right?
Scott Calgaro, yep.
Scott Calgaro says, throw naked women at him. While he's chatting them up, shoot him.
That works. And get me too. So I can't really fault him. It's a great plan.
Dan Miranda says, Bond and Batman, just keep my damn mouth closed and don't monologue away the whole plan.
Yep. We're on the same mindset, Dan. Find a mute, hire him, kill him. Done. Mutes don't monologue.
We're going to get letters.
I don't care. All right.
Or voicemails.
Do you get letters or do we get email? I mean, it isn't 1936.
You can still get letters. You know that?
Nobody writes a letter anymore. Nobody.
The mail still... I actually have a house full of letters that are showing up one every single day.
I handwrite letters to students every day.
Are they bills, though?
Nope. These are actual letters.
From who? From your prisoner inmate program or what?
From whom?
Hey, sorry. Bubba is a sweet man, and he is wrongfully accused.
Right.
She's a nice lady.
All right, now we each get to pick our own hero randomly, some movie, iconic movie hero randomly. This is where it's just us three. And the other two have to come up with a solution on the spot for that person. So you're in charge of you know, going around the room and getting people's vote or whatever. So, Scott, who's your iconic movie hero?
So you're talking existing superhero, not one like we conjured up on our head, right?
Correct. Has hero. To be a, okay. a movie hero.
All right, so okay. how are you going to take down Ant-Man?
You step on him.
Yeah. I mean, Thanos like steps on him and then he's like, oh, and it just keeps going.
That was your idea. But come on, you can be more clever than step on him.
Ant-Man, what would you do? You know what? Take his little ass out in the ocean and just drop him. I mean, that suit is enormous. I don't know if there's pressurization in there. Once he drops to the bottom, I don't think he can float. So he'd have to swim and he would die trying to swim to the top. So I think it would kill Ant-Man.
All right, I saw 47 meters down. That worked out pretty well for them.
All right, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to hire Handsome Rob, left ear, Charlie Crocker, and the Napster himself, and we are going to hack into the suit, and we're going to just make him only work giant. And every time he hits the giant button, he just keeps on getting bigger and bigger until like his head explodes.
Okay, well, at least that went somewhere that wasn't just beating that joke into a dead horse. Yeah. All right. So, Scott, which plan is better?
Not John's.
What? He's like, not really Aaron's, but definitely not John's. That's what he said. All right, John, who's your iconic movie hero?
All right. So, you know what? I was going to choose this one, but I'm going to go with the other one. John Wick. Go for it.
Man, ooh. How do you take down John Wick?
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
Can I bring Magneto back into it again? Because that would solve the problems.
Does he have a suit really made of metal?
No, but he's got his only real thing is guns.
You know what? His only real thing is close combat. Apparently, it's kind of like, you know, it's like Jean-Claude Van Damme in the 80s. People only attack one at a time and also very close. So I think, once again, I'll call back Agent 47. Snipe his ass. He's done.
I'm actually with Aaron on that one. I think long range is the way to go with John Wick because he can't see that coming, and you just get an army of snipers, not a sniper, an army of snipers.
There you go. He can't double tap snipers. He just can't. So yeah.
All right. So I mean, so I guess Aaron gets it because Scott, you're gonna go with Aaron.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that doesn't count towards his regular points, right?
No.
No, these are just ho points. Yeah. These don't count.
These are points.
I'm pretty sure we tied, unless you're actually giving him 2/3 of a point from before.
Right.
I think I tied with Aaron.
Yeah, that works. That's fine. All right. So my iconic movie hero. You ready?
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Jesus Christ.
Well, you get some nails and a hammer.
He'll come back 3 days later. That's not really defeating him.
You do it again.
Just keep doing it.
All right. I'm gonna smear him with some sort of like sweet thing, right?
Oh, you know? Jesus, please.
Get him all smeared, rubbed up and down with something really locust. Nice and sweet.
And, it's locust, and, isn't it?
No.
And then I'm going to...
How do you not see where he's going?
I'm going to throw a box of flies at him. And because he's got all these flies kind of like flying all over him, he clearly has the mark of the beast. So he's no longer worshipped because he's the devil now.
Oh, you just made somebody turn this freaking podcast off and throw their phone at the same time. At the same time. Oh, man. All right. Well, that was a fun topic. That was fun.
That was a pretty good time.
That's always a good one. Recent film and TV recommendations you haven't already talked about. Anything you guys want to mention?
I got a couple. I know that Troy mentioned it on last week's episode, but I actually also watched The End of the Effing World on Netflix, which like he mentioned, is only like about 2.5 hours for the entire run of the series. It's like 8 episodes, like 20 minutes each. I really like this movie, and this TV series. And I don't know why, because I just despise both of the characters, but it was so entertaining. It went in weird directions, and I just loved watching these characters for some reason. So I really do recommend that one. You can watch it in one sitting. I also watched a movie called Please Stand By with Dakota Fanning. Mm. Dakota Fanning plays a autistic woman who's in a group home or something that she's put there by her sister, and she's obsessed with Star Trek. And she writes a Star Trek fan fiction, and all she wants to do is get this thing submitted to a contest that Paramount is putting together to win $100,000. She's written an actual script, proper formatting and everything, and she doesn't get it out in time, so she escapes this facility to go deliver it, to hand deliver herself. And she's never been out on her own, but she's that determined. It's kind of a sweet story, and Dakota Fanning really nails this this character of this autistic woman. Like you don't feel like she's acting. You feel like she is autistic, and I really recommend that. I thought it was, I mean, it's nothing that's gonna, it's, I wouldn't say it's like an Oscar-worthy performance, but it was a very entertaining performance. I just really enjoyed seeing her, and I like seeing her grow up. She's one of those child actors that that actually made it and is still doing stuff, and I really, really liked it. So it's called Please Stand By.
I'm gonna piggyback off that just because you brought up Dakota Fanning, because I've been watching The Alienist.
Yeah, I watched the first episode.
Man, on TNT, and I don't know what's that. They know drama. And they know freaky sex too, because there's a lot of that going on. And it's a serial killer thriller. It's got Daniel Brühl and Luke Evans and Dakota Fanning as well. And like you said, it's weird seeing her all grown up, because I remember her, what was it, Man on Fire? Was probably the first time I remember her.
Before that, she was with the movie with Brittany Murphy, wasn't she?
Yeah, and she's been around forever. Like, it's weird seeing her now. But this is a show that it takes place, you know, many, many, many decades ago, many, many decades ago in old New York. I think it's late 1800s, early 1900s. I can't remember the exact year. And they're searching for a serial killer of young boys who's butchering boys. And it's Daniel Brühl is the alienist, is basically a psychologist, one of those. And he's basically someone who assesses people based on their psychological behavior as opposed to using physical clues. And it's kind of like the first real psychological profile of a serial killer in when people weren't accepting of it. And it's how he is trying to identify this killer through that. It's fascinating to me. It's absolutely fascinating. And the acting is stellar. It's weird seeing it on TNT because it feels like an HBO show, honestly.
Or at least FX.
Yeah. Right. I mean, didn't you check the channel like several times to go, is it really TNT?
They have the logo in the bottom left-hand corner, so it's pretty easy to know where you are, but yeah.
And even in the commercials, they've got like a bar underneath where it says The Alienist. I'm almost like thinking they're convincing themselves that they actually have The Alienist on their channel. Great show. I'm really loving it. It's a few episodes in. I really love it. Also, I saw The Splash of Water. I'm going to keep calling it that because it's just Splash. And it's called The Shape of Water. It's up for Best Picture. I don't think it belongs there. I don't think it's one of the best movies of the year. I just don't.
What's the opposite of snub?
Yeah, it wasn't earned, I don't think. I mean, it's a good movie. It's a really good movie, but it's just not a...
Buns.
What's that?
Buns.
Buns?
Yeah, the opposite of snub is buns.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't get it.
The word snub backwards is buns.
Oh, my God. John, you're on timeout. You're on timeout. Go sit in the corner. So it's a solid film. I think it's beautifully told for the most part. The one thing I will say is Del Toro does a wonderful job of showcasing fables. He brings fables to life, unlike any other director working. I think he struggles with knowing when to let something go, like when something doesn't belong, because there's a lot of weird tonal shifts in this movie. Like, why do I need to keep seeing the main character masturbate? I don't know, but it keeps happening. I don't know. But
I like it.
Of course you do.
Freak. I mean, when in Rome.
Right. It's a really good movie. It's beautifully told. Sally Hawkins is mesmerizing as the lead, and how she basically, what she does is she's a custodian at a secret facility where they basically have an aqua creature, a merman of sorts, with some maybe powers, maybe not, we don't know. And she comes to fall for him and wants to save him. It's like Splash. And then Michael Shannon plays Zod. He's basically the bad guy. He plays it exactly like Zod. To me, I feel like Michael Shannon's bad guys are all the same. They run very much the same. I do like his acting when he's not being a villain. I just do not enjoy his villains. And I know I'm probably in the minority for that, but that's my personal opinion. So I would give that one $7. I do think people should check it out. It's just not, it's not Best Picture. I do think Del Toro deserved Best Director nomination, though, because some of the shots and some of the design and just the best creature effects of last year, just a beautiful movie. So I definitely recommend it. John, you can come back out of your timeout. Did you see anything?
I saw a couple things. I finally got to see I, Tonya, which I highly suggest that watching that movie. Isn't it good? It is very good. So much fun. So much fun to watch and wonderfully acted. Sebastian Stan and girl that I can't think, Margot Robbie, that's her damn name. And Allison Janney, all those people did stellar performances. They portrayed the people who they were portraying perfectly. I loved how they shot it. I loved how they told the story, and they let you know up front that you're getting the story from unreliable narrators. Mm-hmm. So such a good movie. I really think if you have a chance to go see it, which I finally did get a chance to go see it, you should do that.
My review is on the site, and I agree with you 100%. And you know what's really interesting about that after doing some reading on it? That Allison Janney is the only actor of the main ones that didn't actually get to meet the person they were portraying in person. She had to go strictly off of like interviews that were done during the incident or whatever.
Right.
Whereas like Margot Robbie got to meet Tanya Harding, and Sebastian Stan got to meet Gilroy. You say Gilroy?
I guess it's Gilroy. I just pick names and just start slamming them together.
Apparently. So yeah. I know that I don't have a right to be pissed if she doesn't get the award for it, because I didn't see every other movie, but I really hope Allison Janney wins Best Supporting Actress or Actor, yeah, whichever one it goes, because she had some of the funniest one-liners in a movie I saw all year last year. It was so funny.
Hey, this is John's time. Let's down for it. Let's go. Come on, John.
I mean, the least you keep me talking, the better off you are sometimes. I don't know. Anywho, moving right along to other things that I saw and loved so far this month. Season 3 of Lovesick came out at the beginning of the month. Absolutely adore the show. Season 3 holds up, and I can't suggest that show anymore. And finally, I finally broke down and started watching The Goldbergs. That show's kind of fun.
Why are you saying that begrudgingly? This show's great.
It's kind of fun. I mean, I didn't want to have another show to watch, but, you know, I kind of like it. You know?
I still haven't watched it.
You've never seen an episode, Aaron?
No, it falls in the sitcom line. I'm not a big sitcom guy, so I don't watch them very often.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Sitcoms, you don't watch family dramas.
I don't want to watch This Is Us because I got my own life drama. I don't need to watch it on TV. Stop yelling at me.
Yeah, stop pressuring us with these family dramas, damn it.
Damn it. I have been watching The Flying, LA to Vegas or whatever. I think that's funny as shit.
How is that in the sitcom?
It is. It's one of the rare sitcoms I just turned on, and it falls into that Night Court vibe, which is absolutely absurd, and it makes no sense, but I like it. And I'm a fan of that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't know what Night Court about? Is?
The show you just described, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's a guy from Will and Grace. It's like an airline pilot.
No, it's not Will and Grace. It's Dylan McDermott.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
I got it. I know what you're talking about now.
They all look alike. I get it.
Yeah, they do.
All right. Anything else from everybody, or are we good? We all golden?
We're good.
Okay. If you have thoughts on this week's show or you want to suggest a topic, you can send that to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please join our Facebook group. We do post the topic each week there. And our next one is episode 300. So if you want to say anything about the show or roast us or whatever, it'll be on the Facebook group that you can do that. We're also on Twitter @BuyPopcorn. Remember to grab the Hole in the Go with our Apple or Android app, Spotify, or subscribe and review us in podcast apps like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, you know, and you can also find us on thehollywoodoutsider.com or your app of choice. You can also find Scott Clark talking games every week at thegamingoutsider.com. You can find John's artwork on Instagram and everywhere else @rjohn.draws, and me and my other podcast, Smirk and the Blacklist Exposed. Thank you guys for being here. We knocked another one out of the park. 2018 is looking sweet.
Yeah, this was a good time. I really want to hear what everyone thinks of the format.
I do as well.
Do you feel like it's much different?
I feel that it gives much more room for breathing and much more room for having some fun, and it doesn't feel as rigid as it used to.
I like the review format. I feel like it's more conversational.
I'm just gonna dangle out there all by myself for a couple seconds.
Yeah, you're welcome. You do like the review format? You like that, the more conversational? Where
I do.
Yeah.
I think going into it, having a little, forcing us to go into knowing what the movie is a little bit before, actually makes it more conversational, because normally I just kind of sit back and listen. Now I'm actually engaged.
Well, I mean, we could be honest. When everybody's doing theirs, we're sitting around going, well, time to check my phone while they're talking. Bum, ba, dum, bum, bum.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't pull out my phone during the show, Aaron.
Scott has 3 Facebook posts by the time I'm done with my normal review. So now he's only got 1. Poor Scott. He wants movies in his house so he can check his email.
I'm sorry. What were you saying?
He was too busy posting. Did we already do the buy popcorn?
Well played. All right. That's it. Remember, next time is our episode 300. We are going to have a surprise. Not a surprise. We're going to have Brian Williams is coming back to celebrate that monumental event with us. We are also going to have a special section for Mr. Justin McCumber, so don't think that'll be left out. We're going to have a happier nod to our fallen friend. And that's going to do it for this episode. So remember, the next time you head to a theater in 2018, buy popcorn.
So I just figured it'd make more sense to do it that way instead of doing all their comments at the end when we're done talking about them. It just made sense.
Yeah,
it actually does make a lot of sense. That was a good call.
I'd appreciate it if you'd stop thinking so well. Let's just be dumb.
I just figured you'd shoot it down and then bring it up a couple months later like it was your idea.
I didn't remember him bringing it up, but I did after you said something.
Yeah, because you heard video games and just went, all you heard after that was blah, 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 blah. I need a sec. I'm going to have to think of my choice for a hero. I'm going to be winging that because I thought we were starting at 6:30. So,
no. Well, I personally like Aaron's idea of using Discord.
I mean, I'm glad I brought it to the table, right? I thought it was a great idea. I don't know why Scott's not on board. Is Scott, did he die? Or is he? Are you on Discord? Is that what the problem is?
I'm on edge of mute.
My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow host, Scotty Clark.
What's going on, Aaron?
You cut out. Let's try that
again. What the hell? Was that not peppy enough for you?
You sound like Captain Business. That's what it sounded like. Hey, what's going on, Aaron?
I thought it was pretty peppy. What's the matter?
John, was it peppy?
It was peppy, but it was like somebody turned him into a puppet.
It was like peppy with a hand up the ass. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
We're golden.
Let me pee one more time before we go. Sorry, I wasn't expecting to hop on right now. So
okay.
Right back.
That's my fault too, right?